Hey there, Sports History fan. Arnie Chapman here from the Sports History Network. Now, before you jump into this episode, I wanted to share with you an exciting giveaway we have going on with Home Field Apparel. We have a digital $50 gift card to homefieldapparel.com for one lucky fan of the Sports History Network. All you got to do is head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways to sign up. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/giveaways.
Once again, we're talking about the football by numbers, and we have another great number with some of the greatest running backs in NFL history, number 34, and Joe Ziemba joins us once again to talk 34s, and it's coming up in just a moment. This is the Pigskin Daily History Dispatch, a podcast that covers the anniversaries of American football events throughout history on a day-to-day basis. This is your host, Darren Hayes, and we're podcasting from America's North Shore to bring you the memories of the gridiron, one day at a time. So with Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff supplying us with their tunes, let's go no huddle through today's football history headlines.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com.
Hello, my football friends. This is Darren Hayes of PigskinDispatch.com, and welcome once again to the Pigpen. And today we have another bonus edition, and we have our friend Joe Ziemba joining us, and we're going to talk about the greatest number 34s. We're going in order, and we're one third of the way through all our jersey numbers. And Joe Ziemba, the great historian, podcast host, author. There's nobody better to talk about these number 34s than Joe, and we're glad he's here, and we'll bring him in right now. Joe Ziemba, welcome back to the Pigpen.
Darren, once again, thank you for having me. I enjoy the surroundings. I'm comfortable in the pig pen, and I hope we can do some damage tonight. Number 34 is a huge assignment. Hall of Famers, guys that might have to be in the Hall of Fame, and then some great stories along the way that we hope to share. So thank you again. We appreciate it.
Oh, we appreciate you. And I don't know if you've noticed it here in the pig pen, but you've been on so many times. We have your name engraved in one of the fence posts here in the pig pen. So you can just keep leaning against that one. That's your post.
Thank you. There's no greater honor. We appreciate that as well.
Well, I guess what I got to start where we always do, and just let's see who Canton says were the number 34, the enshrined people in the Pro Football Hall of Fame. And they are telling us in alphabetical order that we have Earl Campbell, Franco Harris, Walter Payton, Joe Perry, Thurman Thomas as our enshrinees. Now, I'm not so sure about Franco Harris. I could not find him in a 34. Of course, we all know him by the 32. And we talked about him with Joe Zagorski just a couple of days ago. I'm not sure what you found on Franco Harris with 34.
Yeah, the only time I found him is his final year in Seattle, which was a disappointing year for him. He wore number 34. Otherwise, was number 32 throughout his career.
I think I have my Steelers blinders on because we can't picture Franco Harris in any other uniform. But maybe that's what it was. I set the blindness there. That's right. Franco Harris did play for Seattle. That explains it. Okay. Yeah. Well, do you want to start off with talking about some of these Hall of Famers?
Yeah, let's start with Franco. He only had the 1 year with number 34, 9 consecutive Pro Bowls. That's pretty rare in football. Won 4 Super Bowls in that magical backfield with Rocky Blyer. Rookie of the Year, MVP of Super Bowl IX, I believe it was. Just a great runner. When he retired, he was 3rd all-time in rushing. And here's our first little trivia of the day. John Grisham wrote a book called Playing for Pizza, and the star football player was named Franco in that book. Can you guess who that Franco is named after?
I would say it'd have to be 32 for the Steelers, number 34 for the Seahawks.
You are correct, sir.
Wow, I didn't realize it. First of all, I didn't realize that Grisham wrote a book with the word title word pizza in the title. That's yes. Kind of an odd one for him. Well, yeah, Franco is near and dear to my heart. I can't say enough about him. I grew up and he was just one of those guys that I had, you know, pictures of him up on my wall in my bedroom when I was a kid, and just love the guy. You know, Franco's Italian Army. I can remember the signs in the end zone at Three Rivers. He was quite the ball player, and we loved him in Pennsylvania anyway, because he was a Penn State grad. And
that's right. Yeah.
He wasn't even a feature back. He was sort of the big fullback blocking back for, I believe it was, Lydell Mitchell was in the backfield with him.
Mm-hmm. I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. So quite a tandem there for Joe Paterno. Okay. He wore it for 1 year. Maybe we'll come back to him. Maybe. I don't know if we can put him on the list for 34s, because he really didn't do a lot with the 34
on.
We
should have someone who wears it a little more often. Maybe someone like Joe Perry, a Hall of Famer who wore it every single year of his career, I believe.
All right. Right.
Although I did see that he was listed as number 74, which is pretty rare, pretty odd for a fullback. But Joe Perry was a fullback who didn't like to just knock you over. He could run around you. He was fast. He was just one of those guys that could do it all. And actually, he was the first African-American to win the NFL's MVP award. He was the first player to rush for 1,000 yards in two consecutive seasons in the league as well. So when he retired, he had almost 10,000 yards, and three times he led the NFL in rushing. Three times he led the NFL in yards per game. So he was a consistent player throughout his career with San Francisco, then some time with Baltimore, and then back at San Francisco again at the end.
Yeah, it's interesting looking at his years he played, because he played from 1948 to 1963. So 48, 49, he would have been with San Francisco in the AAFC, correct?
That's right. Yes, yes.
So he was one of the few that transferred over from the AAFC into the NFL and played a good career in the NFL, too. So, yeah,
when he did retire, I don't think I mentioned it, he was the NFL's all-time leading rusher back there in 1963.
Really? Wow, that is interesting. Yes, the all 1950s team he made, and like you said, all the All-Pros. I think he's a pretty good candidate to probably go on that list right away.
He would be, and it's pretty rare when you get a fullback whose nickname is the Jet, which means he had some speed as well.
Yeah, 1948, Jets were just coming about, you know, too. So, he's a good player to have on that list. And he's not the only one, because there are a lot of good names here coming up. And I'll let you choose who you want to go to next.
Let's talk about another favorite, which would be Thurman Thomas from Buffalo.
All
Except
right.
For his last year, he played his entire career with Buffalo. And he wore number 34 every single season. He was the four straight Super Bowls for fans in Buffalo. Unfortunately, the four straight games he played in were not ending successfully, but he was the MVP of the league in 1991. And he was the only player ever to lead the NFL in total yards for four straight seasons. So he had some very good numbers. As we all know, he's in the Hall of Fame. Over 12,000 total yards rushing. Got a chance to meet him a couple of years ago. The Professional Football Researchers Association had Thurman Thomas at their Buffalo conference. And just a real gentleman. It was a pleasure to meet him and to talk some great football with a true legend like that. So Thurman Thomas, I think, should be on our list.
I definitely agree. He had eight seasons in a row from his second season through his ninth season, going over 1,000 yards each season rushing. And then his receiving yardage was off the charts, too. He had almost 4,500 total yards receiving in his career. I can remember those little passes that Jim Kelly would toss off to him, and he'd get all that yak, you know, the yards after catch. And he was a good back. And I just have a mental block. I don't remember him being with the Miami Dolphins, but I look at it. He only had 28 rushes for 136 yards. Maybe that's why I don't remember him.
Yeah, pretty minimal there at the end of his career. I'm not sure why that happened, but yeah, unfortunately.
But I totally agree with you. Thurman Thomas should be on that list of our top 10 number 34s, because he is definitely a great one. And but do you want to go to one of your Chicago guys that's in the Hall of Fame?
We could do that. I don't know if you've heard his name before. His name is Sweetness, Walter Payton.
All right.
Played for the Bears, of course. His coach, Mike Ditka, called him not only the greatest football player he'd ever seen, but also he was even greater as a human being. And one time, he led the held records in the NFL for career rushing yards, touchdowns, carries, yards from scrimmage, all-purpose yards, and lots of other good things. And he also retired with the most receptions by a non-receiver. So he was just so valuable, 5'10", 200 pounds, coming out of Jackson State, I believe, first-round draft choice back in 75, but so durable, he only missed one game in his career, and that was his rookie year. And I think maybe the only regret that we as Chicago fans had at the time that he was unable to score a touchdown in the early 1986 Super Bowl against the Patriots. But he was the NFL most valuable player in 77. In fact, 1977 was such a great year for him. The statistics were fairly amazing. He rushed 339 times to lead the league for a league-leading 1,852 yards, led the league with 14 touchdowns, also yards per game at 132.3. So it was just a wonderful year on his way. One of his nine times he was named an All-Pro. So Walter Payton, we still miss him. Just an incredible person. Got later into IndyCar racing, as we know, and won that Super Bowl with the Chicago Bears. We're still waiting for another one.
Now, I mean, he has, he tailed off for him at the end of his career, but even his last season in 1987, he still had 533 yards rushing for an older player. You know, he was 13 years into his career by that point. That's outstanding. And I can just remember some of his, he really didn't look like he would run sometimes. It was sort of like he glided and just floated, you know, sometimes. Dance. I think the defenders thought that too. He was like a ghost sometimes, just sit, go after him and he wasn't there. But yeah, what a smooth player he was. Sweetness was a perfect name for him. Whoever gave him that moniker aptly named him. So yeah, I think Walter Payton is definitely on our list. If anybody is on our list, it's Walter Payton. That's for sure.
Yeah, yeah. And of course, the NFL now has its Walter Payton Award for someone who exemplifies the way that Payton lived his life, and one that donates his time off the field to helping others. So it was a aptly named for a wonderful player, Walter Payton.
And it always seemed that he was always having fun too. I don't know if I ever remember him, you know, looking upset or a frown on his face. You know, he was always smiling, you know, when they'd show him on the cameras. He was having a good time. He was enjoying a game of football, and that's what it's all about. And it's just, it was great for the youth of that era just to watch a great role model like Walter Payton. You know, like you said, great things off the field and on the field. Tremendous person. Never met him, but just everything I've read about him and have seen about him and just watching his mannerisms, you know, great player, great person, and definitely deserves to be in the top 10 of the number 34s. That's for sure.
Yeah, he had that infectious smile, and apparently I read a biography of him, and he was quite the prankster as well. But a lot of the things we can't share on the air here, so but he was a fun guy to be around, I guess.
Very mischievous, Walter Payton. Oh, yep. Okay. All right. Now we'll have to all go read the book here to find out what those are. Mm-hmm. So I guess another great back, sort of the same era, came in during Payton's career, is Earl Campbell. I mean, the Tyler Rose. I mean, what a great collegiate career he had and a pro career. What do you have to say about Earl Campbell?
Yeah, Campbell, of course, again, Hall of Famer, MVP in 1979, when he led the league in both touchdowns and rushing yards. Just all sorts of great honors throughout college at Texas, where he was an All-American. Elected, of course, to the College Football Hall of Fame in 90, the Pro Football Hall of Fame in 91. And also named to the NFL's 100th anniversary team. And his jersey, this is the number 34, was retired by the University of Texas. So another gentleman who has certainly had an exemplary career, well-deserved of the honors. And I was looking at his first 3 years in the league were just so dominating. 1,450 yards, 1,697 yards, 1,934, 13 touchdowns, 19 and 13 touchdowns those first 3 years. So he was quite the dominant player, and he managed to maintain that pace for another 3 years or so. And again, just he kind of retired early. He had said he had had enough, and he said it was time. So he wasn't in the league that long, I believe about 6 or 7 years, and decided that was going to be it for him.
Yeah, he. I think it's the only NFL game that I've gone to see that the Steelers weren't involved in. I got to go to Cleveland his rookie year when the Oilers played there. And the main reason was we had the chance to go. My father's friends got some tickets. And main thing was to go see this outstanding rookie who was just tearing the league up. And he had a pretty good game. I'm trying to look up his stats from that game. And they're not coming up to me very easily here. But he had a really nice game against Cleveland, who had a decent team back then in the 70s. So, but I can remember how large that man's thighs were. You know, when you're sitting yeah. up in the upper level of the Cleveland Municipal Stadium, and you're, you know, so you're probably 100 yards away from the players, but just to see how big his thighs were compared to everybody else's on team. I mean, even the lineman, he just had those strong legs and used them to drive and run over people. It was kind of fun to watch.
Mm-hmm. At 5'11" and over 230 pounds, I wouldn't want to see him coming at me. And I think
sure.
the one word that is used throughout history to describe Earl Campbell is punishing. I didn't want to get in his way, but he could break those tackles so easily and keep on going. So he was, I guess, one of our better power backs in the league. He'd rather go through you than around you.
Yeah, and unfortunately, he's had some health issues, I think, later in life. I know he's still with us, but I know he's has trouble walking, and I think it's, you know, probably from maybe that punishing career. And, you know, defenders back then could punish a runner a lot more, too. Yeah. He'd dish it out, but he also had to take it. And unfortunately, it was like some of our great heroes from the gridiron. He is suffering some in his older age here. And so we wish the best for him, and hopefully he can get through that pain. And we appreciate what he did on the football field, because he is definitely another one that I think maybe we ought to put on our list here and take up the fourth spot here.
I think he deserves it.
I definitely think so. Definitely think so. Okay. Well, that's, we talked about all five of our Hall of Famers, but we still have a lot of great players here that are not in the Hall of Fame, at least yet. And I'll let you lead the way here, Joe. You tell us who you want to go to.
Yeah, let's talk about a couple of folks who might not even make our list tonight, but had great, great pro careers. And I'm going to start out with Les Josephson. And the trivia about him is he came from a small town in Minnesota. He went to Augustana College in Sioux Falls, South Dakota, not a real football powerhouse when you compare to Ohio State or Alabama, et cetera. But he never played more than 8-man football till he got into college. So that was the first time he played 11-man football. But he grew up in a 1,000-acre farm, made a Pro Bowl when he was in the NFL with the Rams, and spent his entire career with the Rams, and another one of our favorites because he wore number 34 his entire career. So once he got to Augustana, he had a nice career, but he went undrafted. Then he got signed by Dallas, kind of as a free agent after tryout, but immediately they sent him to the Rams in a trade. And he managed to hang around for his entire career from 64 through 74, picked up over 3,400 yards, 194 catches throughout his career. And after football, he became a film consultant for football movies and even appeared in the Warren Beatty movie called Heaven Can Wait.
Oh, yeah.
He was also a consultant for that not Oscar-winning film called Gus, about a place-kicking mule.
But that didn't win an Oscar? Oh my gosh.
No, must have just
missed. That movie.
But he did retire. He was the third leading rusher all time for the Rams when he retired in 1974. So again, an interesting career. One we bring up for a guy who did make a Pro Bowl at one time, but fell a little short of the Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I mean, he's there's not too many people that played made the NFL that played eight-man football. I didn't realize they played eight-man football in Minnesota. I think always think of Texas, you know, with the eight-man football in Oklahoma. I've never heard of Minnesota, but we talked about somebody else not too long ago who played eight-man football in high school that made the we talked about it on the list. I think they were even a Hall of Famer. I can't remember who it is offhand, but not a whole lot of them that are out there that make it to the big time. But yeah, definitely. I'm glad you mentioned him. He's a very interesting player.
Got a couple of defensive backs or defensive players. Again, with the number 34. Don't know if they'll make our list tonight, but one was called Terry Hogue, defensive back. And he played from 84 through 96 for a variety of teams. Won a Super Bowl. Played those 13 years with six different teams. And again, I wasn't familiar with his career, where he had been and what he had done, but just a very consistent player throughout the years. And after retirement, he made an impression. He was looking for something to do, didn't like office hours, didn't like construction, went to California, bought a plot of land, and now Terry is an award-winning wine producer. So he has success both on and off the field. That's another one of our number 34s.
Now, we just talked about Terry Hogue on our we celebrate the Hall of Famers' birthdays for the college and the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Oh. And Terry Hogue is a college football Hall of Famer. He just had his birthday April 11th. So if you check out our April 11th post down in our Hall of Fame section, you can read all about Terry Hogue's collegiate career. That we pay tribute to him on his birthday for being a Hall of Famer in the College Football Hall of Fame in Atlanta. So, yeah, definitely a great player.
There's one more gentleman whose name is going to now live on forever, even though many people may never have heard of him. Played 12 years in the league, and he's a two-time Pro Bowler named Bill Coleman. Played at North Carolina and played for Baltimore and St. Louis Cardinals, I believe, where he finished his career. He was a linebacker, as I mentioned, 6'2", 229 pounds. So had a nice career. But the reason I say his name is going to live on forever, his family has donated a substantial amount to the University of North Carolina. And now the football practice field is named the Bill Corman Practice Complex. And they've also now have a training program for their football players to help them adjust to life, both in college and out, called the Bill Corman Game Plan for Success. And so it's training for those students who are involved in football. So, again, number 34, we may not remember him for his football career, although it was lengthy, two times in the Pro Bowl. But at North Carolina, at least, his name is going to be there forever.
Wow, that is a great thing that the family did. You know, that's it's one way that your legacy in the game of football lives on for ages to come, you know, having your name on a bunch of things at where you went to school, and especially a big-time school like the now it's the Tar Heel country in North Carolina. So that is a great thing. I'm glad you shared that with us. All right, where would you like to talk about next?
We could go with some other backfield members who had good careers just short of Word of the Hall of Fame. And one of my favorite all-time players is Craig Ironhead Hayward.
Oh, yeah.
And he had some difficulties during his career, but he did lead the NFL in rushing one year with over 1,000 yards. 5'11", 260 pounds, although I've read some articles that he weighed as much as 340 as a running back. And I can't imagine, I know Errol Campbell was big, but here comes another guy, 100 pounds heavier, coming at you. And I wanted to find out how he got this nickname of Ironhead. Well, apparently that came in high school when there was some kind of discussion in a pool hall, and someone cracked a pool cue over his head. Didn't faze him. The pool cue didn't make it through the night, but Craig Hayward did. And then he became more famous. During his career, he made a commercial for Zest Soap, which showed him and kind of made a different way of bathing for men with a little scrubber on her back more appealing and acceptable when you see this big guy doing that. But he had a hard time with his weight. He had weight yo-yo diets throughout his career. And one time he said, he asked a reporter, "Have you ever heard about the diet I went on with one of my coaches?" And the guy said, "No." And he said, "Yeah, coach lost 50 pounds. I gained 5. So Ironhead had a hard time pushing away from the table. And there's lots of stories about him, how big his head was. His helmet size was 8 3½.
Wow.
And said it was made from a bucket to fit Ironhead. And someone asked him one time, "Hey, Ironhead, what's your favorite food?" He said, "Hey, whatever's available on the table." So he was a guy that people really loved. He had some difficulties throughout his career. His career probably wasn't as long as it could have been, but still fairly successful. He was a consistent rusher, ended up with over 4,300 yards in his career, and made the 1995 Pro Bowl, I believe, as well. So Craig Ironwood Hayward, not sure if he'll make our list, but I'd like to nominate him tonight.
Yeah, I think he's definitely one we'll come back and talk about. Now, something we ought to put sort of an asterisk by his name, because he lost a couple seasons. He was one of those players right out of college that got lured by the USFL, I believe. I'm not sure which team he played for them, but I know he got a bunch of carries in the USFL, and how those a lot of carries take their toll on a player. But his first year in the NFL, he had 355 yards. I was thinking carries, but his rushes were down when he came in the NFL, but I think he was up in the 300s for his USFL career, at least in that first season that they played that full year, if I'm not mistaken. And of course, he's got a very famous son that's playing in the NFL right now.
Yeah, I was going to mention it. Yeah. Yeah.
So
near and dear to, nice hereditary there.
Yeah. For Cam Hayward of the Steelers. So, when you were saying he was 340 pounds, I don't even know Cam Hayward playing defensive line. I don't even think he's gone 340 ever. So, but yeah, that runs in the bloodline there. Some great ball players, both the Haywards. Okay. Yeah. I think we've got to put him on our consideration list to come back to, because he was a very good back, and I wish we could have saw him in an NFL uniform, or at least have those USFL stats come into.
Yeah.
But for some reason they don't like to count those.
Yeah, we had another good running back that, again, I put in my secondary list today beneath the Hall of Famers, but maybe, I don't know, maybe he'll get some interest at one time, and that's Ricky Lynn Williams. University of Texas, played for New Orleans, Miami, Baltimore during his career. Only made one Pro Bowl, but he had 5 1,000-yard rushing seasons after his Heisman Trophy career at Texas. He was 2-time All-American. And I remember him because after Coach Ditka left Chicago and went down to New Orleans, he and Ricky, you may have seen this, posed as a bride and a groom for some reason in some national magazine. But Ditka made a trade for his draft rights, and it was the only time in NFL history where I believe he was the only player selected in the draft that year by New Orleans. They gave away all the other draft picks trying to get Ricky. But he missed a couple of seasons. He also tried baseball. He had some other violations with the NFL. So he missed 2 full seasons that I can tell, and several others he didn't play a lot. For example, one game in 2007, but still ended up with over 10,000 yards rushing total in his career. And also a good receiver with 2,606 yards receiving. And in 2002, he led the league in rushing with 383 attempts with 1,853 yards carried. So Ricky had a checkered career. He was up or down, not too much in the middle.
Right. But in his defense, he missed the seasons. They were both choices that he made, both the seasons that he missed. But to hit the 10,000 yard mark, that's pretty substantial. You know, there's not a whole lot of backs in the NFL that can say they've rushed for over 10,000 yards. I'm sure it's got to be less than 100 people that have done it. I'm sure it's probably less than 50 people, I think. I think he deserves some strong consideration being on this list because he's very talented, but we can come back to him if we want to talk about. But
yeah, I think we could put him on there.
I agree.
I was impressed by those 5 years of over 1,000 yards despite all his difficulties.
Especially with two different teams too. It wasn't like he was in the same offense, you know, with the same offensive line. So yeah, definitely I think we'll put him as our fifth one then. I think we're in agreement on that. Do you want to talk? There's another player that was part of the War 34 that was part of a big time trade. And this was, how about Herschel Walker? He's sort of similarity with Ricky within that. He was part of that big trade where Minnesota and Dallas got, I forget how many draft picks. It was almost like the Ollie Mattson trade that we talked about a few weeks ago.
I was just going to say, I think when we, when I did that on my podcast, some of the comments were, hey, wait, what about Herschel Walker? So yeah, that was another humongous trade.
But the Dallas Cowboys trading Walker probably built their 1990s dynasty by doing that. I mean, just look at the success they had after that. Dallas traded him in 1988, and good fortunes came a few years later at the Minnesota's expense, I think. I think Dallas ended up getting a better part of that deal.
I would agree.
Yeah, Herschel Walker for his career, you know, 8,225 yards, 4.2 yards per carry, 61 touchdowns. He was I always remembered about him. I think he at one point in his career said he had never lifted a weight, but he did 1,000 sit-ups every day and 1,000 push-ups since he was a freshman in high school or something along those lines. And that's how he got so strong, just by doing those push-ups and sit-ups. And I can remember it was the NFL Today or one of the pregame shows. They had one of the anchor people on there go to his home, and he was doing his workout, and there he's doing his 500 sit-ups and 500 push-ups, and he do 500 more and 500 more. I'm like, wow, that is just some raw talent to do it without weights, if that's true. And I believed him when he said it. Yeah, so he played Minnesota, 6 years with Dallas, 3 years with Minnesota, 3 years with the Philadelphia Eagles, and one of his final years with the New York Giants. And then he ended up going back to Dallas his last 2 years. But great career. There's a lot of big names on here. I think he's one we're probably going to have to come back to on.
Yeah.
Okay. Somebody else that is near and dear to my heart is Andy Russell, because he's one of the great Steelers linebackers, War 34, kind of an odd number for a linebacker when you look at it now. I think they've restricted linebackers can't wear in the 30s anymore, I think in the 1970s. But he started playing in 1963 with Pittsburgh, his entire career with the Steelers, retired in 1976, of course, after winning a couple Super Bowls. But he was hard to replace when he ended up leaving the Steelers. I think they had two or three different outside linebackers to try to fill in, Robin Cole and Taves and Dirt Winston, and they're all good players, but they just didn't have what Andy Russell brought to the table to be on that line with Ham and Lambert. I always admired Andy Russell. He was a big favorite of mine.
And I have another fullback, which we haven't talked about. Again, one who maybe didn't reach his full potential because of personality problems. And I shouldn't say that, but it seemed to be from the articles. But Cookie Gilchrist was a fullback, played in the Canadian League, then came down to Buffalo, went to Denver, Miami, and Denver again. A good-sized back again, 6'3", 251 pounds. He was the first rusher in the AFL to go for 1,000 yards. And his first 4 years in the NFL after being in the Canadian League were what I thought would be phenomenal. 62 through 65, three of those years he led the league in rushing attempts, and twice he led in rushing yards, and all 4 years he led in touchdowns. So he was the AFL rushing leader in 62 and 64. So I thought this is a guy, his career kind of ended after the 67 season. I think he may have gone back to Canada. I'm not quite sure. But it just seems like he should have been around a little bit longer than he was. There was, again, some difficulties, both medically, et cetera, with him. But a nice career in the NFL alone, or the AFL, he rushed for over 4,000 yards and caught another 1,100 yards in passing yards. So a nice career, not likely to make the Hall of Fame, but Cookie Gilchrist was certainly an intriguing individual.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of interesting because I think the Buffalo Bills won the AFL championship in 64 and 65, I believe. And 64, he was with Buffalo. That's his AFL championship he won. 65, mm-hmm. he played for Denver, but he was a first-team All-Pro both years. So he left the champ team, went to another team, and still made a first-team All-Pro. So mm-hmm. very similar numbers to what he had in Buffalo with over 900 yards rushing. So
yeah, and then you mentioned that he won the AFL championship in 64. He also won the Grey Cup in Canada. And then when he was retired, he was named as the all-time AFL fullback. So, people remembered him. He just made a good impression. He just was all over the place. When you look at some of the teams he played with, both in Canada and in the U.S., he had quite a few locations.
Yeah, good ball player. I mean, I say we could probably put him under consideration. I'm not sure if he'll make it, like you said, but yeah. I think definitely had a career worth talking about here. Those are some impressive numbers, especially he's sort of almost like Hayward. You know, if you counted some of the things he did in the other professional leagues he played for, you know, he might be one of our you know, big time guys here.
That's right.
But it's hard to see those numbers. I don't know if the Pro Football Hall of Fame, they don't always recognize the Canadian leagues and the World Football Leagues and USFLs for some reason. But maybe someday they'll combine all those just to have some good players here.
I just noticed, Darren, we haven't included any kickers yet. And so I wanted to suggest Don Chandler.
Okay.
Kicked for years for the Giants, but really made his name those last 3 years of his career in Green Bay. Helped them win the first two Super Bowls. So 12 seasons in the league, one Pro Bowl, but twice won a Super Bowl, and four times before the Super Bowl, they were NFL champs. And he was voted the best punter of the 60s, although his yardage wasn't really that good. I think it was in the low 40s. But he had a monster punt that he was known for in 65, went 90 yards. And I found this interesting because that kick in 65 was the longest in the NFL since 1923, when Wilbur Fats Henry got off a 94-yarder for the old Canton Bulldogs in 23. And so Chandler had been struggling that year for a little bit, but a 90-yard kick is pretty amazing. He also had a 70-yard kick for back for his college in Florida in 1955, which was still, I think, the second longest in that school's history. So over his career, here's what I was thinking of. He got off 660 punts in the NFL, and his average was 43.45 yards, 43.5 yards per punt. Not bad. But that 90-yard kind of sticks out as one of the longest ever in the NFL.
Yeah.
So that would be Don Chandler, nicknamed the Babe.
Now what years did he play, Joe?
He started in 56 with the Giants.
Okay.
And ended up, he was traded to Green Bay in 65. They kind of thought he might have been washed up. Then just played those three seasons. And he was a balding guy at the time. And, of course, was referred to the old man by fans and media alike. Now, I bet he is the only NFL player ever to come out of Bacone College in Muskogee, Oklahoma. And Bacone was established as a school for Native Americans, and that's why I was surprised to see Don Chandler went there at least for a year. Now, I got a chance to visit Bacone many years ago, and it really is a neat place, a small school. They're still around, have a decent basketball team, but I digress. We're talking about Don Chandler, great punter, the greatest punter of the 60s, according to the NFL experts of the time.
You know, it's really amazing when you say that 90-yard punt, because that's why I wanted to ask the era, because I have a theory. I haven't read it anywhere, but you're talking about like Fast Henry with the 94-yard. And it seems like there's a lot of long punts in college and the pro game back in those, you know, the teens and the 20s of the early 20th century. And I was wondering, I'm thinking maybe it was the shape of the ball because it was more of a rounded shape.
More rounded, yeah.
You know, almost like You're kicking a basketball, it would keep rolling, where our modern day football, you know, takes some weird hops and bounces all over the place, sometimes the wrong way. But Chandler would have been punting, you know, with a Duke ball from the 50s on. So that's more similar to what we use today. So same girth and the pointed shape. So that is impressive. 90-yard punt. Wow.
Yeah, and they said he let it fly from just about his own goal line and all the way to the it was against San Francisco. It landed on the 49ers 25 and took a bounce and put it down on the 10-yard line. So pretty interesting.
Very impressive. Okay. I'm glad you mentioned him. Let's see. Who do we have here? We still have a bunch of pretty decent backs that were for quite a bit of time. I mean, Greg Pruitt of the Browns, you know, fame. Greg was they had two Pruitts in the backfield. Greg and Mike Pruitt, I can remember with the Browns in the 70, late 70s, early 80s, I think they both played. He had a decent career, over 5,600 yards, 27 touchdowns. And, you know, it was a shared backfield too, because they both carried the ball a lot. And, back in that pro set offense that Cleveland used with Brian Sipe at the helm. So I can remember him well, facing my team twice a year. He definitely inflicted some damage. I'm not sure that he'll make our list, but definitely worth somebody mentioning.
He was great. He had three straight years over 1,000 yards rushing. And it was nice. He was one of those players that toiled for 12 years, but in his last year with the Raiders, he won a Super Bowl. Our trivia about him, though, is he has a NFL rule named after him called the Greg Pruitt rule. He used to wear tearaway jerseys, so when defenders would try and grab him, pull him down, it would rip off. And because of that, different type of jersey he wore, the NFL put in a rule now that it's illegal to wear a tearaway jersey because of Greg Pruitt back in the 70s and 80s.
Wow, another Joe Ziemba tidbit. I mean, I can remember the tearaway jerseys, but I didn't realize it was Pruitt that sort of caused the rule to be caused that. Called that. Very interesting. Another back I think it's worth mentioning is more of a modern player, D'Angelo Williams. I mean, he had a brilliant career. Carolina Panthers, played with the Steelers, I think, near the end of his career. But he also had some surprising yardage, you know, almost 8,100 yards rushing, 61 touchdowns. And he was another one that played in a shared backfield. Carolina, I'm forgetting who the other back was, but they had another really good bell cow back that was in the same backfield as D'Angelo Williams. They shared carries. The name escapes me right now. He had a really nice career everywhere he went, including the Steelers. He really filled a role for them in 2015 when I think it was Le'Veon Bell was injured early on. I think that's the year he tore the ACL, and they really counted on Williams to carry him through that season. So we were glad he was there. But I think – I'm not sure he'll make the list either, but just somebody else I wanted to make sure we mentioned.
Yeah, there's another back. Again, not fabulous numbers, but good numbers was Ricky Young. Who was with the I think it was with San Diego. It could be. Yep, San Diego Chargers and Minnesota. 9 years in the NFL, and he led the league in receptions with 88 in 1978. And the last when he joined Minnesota, people were wondering if he was tough enough, I guess. And he had a game where he impressed Coach Bud Grant, and who told the media after that, I guess Grant had knocked over, not Grant, Ricky Young had knocked over a few people. And Bud Grant said, "Now you know why Ricky Young is a Viking. Ricky Young is the kind of player who plays hurt, never makes a mistake, and gives you 100% all the time. If you had a team full of Ricky Youngs, you probably would never lose a game. Kind of cool quote from your coach while you're still playing. Usually they talk about it after you retired, how good you were.
I mean, that, just you, the statement you said about him leading the NFL in receptions as a running back. I mean, how many times has that ever happened? It's the only time I can ever think of it may have happened.
Isn't it? That's a lot of catches, 88 out of the backfield. Plus he rushed for 134 yards that year. He actually caught more yards passing than he did rushing. So it was pretty interesting.
Yeah, I would. I mean, if somebody was said, "Hey, what running back ever led the NFL?" I would guess, you know, Roger Craig or Thurman Thomas, you know, somebody like that, or Marshall Faulk. But that's astonishing. 88 receptions by a running back, and to lead the NFL. That's impressive. Very impressive. I think maybe he ought to be under consideration because that's quite a feat.
I think so. Yeah, I like Ricky Young. When you read about the guy and what he did, yeah, it's pretty impressive.
Most definitely. Another player. I mean, we've got quite a few players that were for quite a few years, and we don't have to go into great detail on them. But like Tyrone Braxton had 13 seasons with number 34. You know. Interesting defensive back. He had 36 interceptions in his career, 617 return yards off him, 4 TDs. Played from 1987 with the Denver Broncos. And he snuck a year with Miami in there in the middle of his career, but all the way to 1999, he retired with the Broncos. Very interesting character. They're probably not going to make our top 10, but worth mentioning because he had all those seasons where, and Ray Buchanan's another one, had 12 seasons wearing the number 34. Another interesting player to talk about is the DB position. He had 47 interceptions, 827 return yards off him, 4 touchdowns. Came into the league with Indianapolis 1993. Played with them 4 years. Played with the Atlanta Falcons, is where most people remember him, for 7 seasons. And then one final year with Oakland in 2004. But I think that Mr. Buchanan might be another one we might want to consider when we go to do our deliberations.
Yeah, and I noticed those 47 interceptions were quite impressive. And I found out also he went to Proviso East High School in Maywood, Illinois, which is a near suburb of Chicago. And we just talked about Ray Nitschke going to Proviso. And Doc Rivers, the NBA coach and player, went there as well. But Buchanan was a really gifted athlete with that cool nickname of Big Play Ray. And during his time in Illinois as a high school track athlete, he won the state championship in the long jump and the triple jump. So he was only 5'9", 186 in the NFL, but sure made his mark with all those interceptions.
Yeah, quite the ball hawk for being a little bit smaller in stature at the DB position. So, yeah, very interesting candidate there. I don't know. Do you have anybody else you want to bring into the conversation here before
A couple other guys, just because they seem to have long careers. One with the best nickname was Elvis Patterson, nicknamed Toast. And every time I see someone named Elvis, I cringe once in a while because announcers have such a field day. There was a good freshman guard playing basketball at DePaul University in Chicago this year with the first name of Elvis. And I was just praying that every time he does something wrong, the announcers wouldn't say it, but they did. He made a bad pass. Coach took him out. And, of course, the announcer said, "Oh, Elvis has left the building." No, stop it. But Elvis Patterson, a defensive back, had a nice long 10-year career, won 2 Super Bowls. And I did love the nickname of Toast. And he played it at Kansas. And then one more, actually got a couple more that I liked. A linebacker named Gus Otto, one time to the Pro Bowl, one time he won the AFL championship, but he played his entire career of about 7 or 8 years with the Raiders, a 6'1", 220-pounder. So he was obviously a tough guy. He wasn't that big, but a nice size to play linebacker for the Raiders. And the final name I might throw at you is a guy named Chuck Shanta, played 8 years with the Patriots when they were in the American Football League. And for that time span, he was named to the All-60s team for the Patriots. But he was a defensive back, 6 foot, 200 pounds, and played those 8 years, as I said, with the Patriots. But 1 year, because he was a little bit of athletically inclined, his coach wanted to move him to fullback. And they only had one fullback because of injuries, and they had no backup. So the coach decided he's going to move Shanta over to fullback. And one of the reporters said to him, you've been called very versatile, but how do you feel about the move? Have you ever carried the ball? And he said, nope, don't have any experience. I never even carried the ball in high school. I just hope that Larry Gannon can last the whole game. So he was ready to play, but not ready to play. So that was Chuck Shanta. Probably not on our top 10 list tonight, but I rest my case.
I guess one other name that we probably should mention, and he didn't have a very long career in the NFL. Bo Jackson wore 34, Heisman Trophy winner.
That's right.
Outstanding two stars in two different sports, with baseball and football, and did very well at both of them. But unfortunately, injury sort of got him in his fourth season, and he never could recover from it. But, just those 4 years, he had almost 2,800 yards and 16 touchdowns. But like I said, really he only had three good seasons because the injury sort of dampened him that final season. But he could have really done some great things, I think, if he didn't get hurt or if he just focused on football even.
That's right, yeah. Made a name for himself. His yardage was a little better than Joe Marconi, the fullback for the Chicago Bears. And they won the 63 title. That was the only year he made All-Pro, but he was one of those guys that we talked about in the past, wore his crew cut proudly, was not afraid to put his nose in the middle of the action. But since he was on the Bears, I had to add him and let us know about Joe Marconi. Picked up almost 3,000 yards during his career, and as I said, one Pro Bowl and one NFL championship.
Wow. All right. Are you ready to go through and see who we want to pick for this top 10?
I am. I've got my pencil with the eraser ready. Even though I wrote with magic marker, we'll see how that works.
Okay. It might make a little bit of a smear there, I think. Well, okay. So far we've put five individuals on our list. We have Joe Perry, Thurman Thomas, Earl Campbell, Walter Payton, all Hall of Famers. And we've added to that Ricky Williams as our fifth spot, as our Hall of Famers. And then ones we said we were going to come back for consideration, Herschel Walker, Ray Buchanan, Franco Harris, Ricky Young, Don Chandler, Craig Hayward, Cookie Gilchrist, and Terry Hogue. And I think I got them all. So we have five names to choose.
I guess I'd throw out Cookie Gilchrist because if we're going by the number and not strictly the NFL, he had some nice numbers in the two leagues up in Canada and in the U.S.
Okay, I agree there. So that's our sixth spot. I'm thinking Ray Buchanan with those numbers.
Yeah.
In the career he had, I think he should be on there. So that takes our seventh spot. How about Herschel Walker too?
Yeah, I think that he deserves to be on there.
Okay. So that is eight. And
how about Greg Pruitt? Did we think he had enough accolades to be on our list tonight?
I didn't put him under consideration. I know we talked about him. I'm not sure what was his yardage here. Oops.
What was I thinking of Ricky Young, I think.
I think Ricky Young, I think, is who we were talking about. I think
Yep. Ricky Young. Well, Greg Pruitt did play 12 years and five times a Pro Bowler. But
Ricky Young with having those, leading the NFL in receptions. That's pretty impressive.
Yeah.
As a running back. To lead the NFL in receptions is impressive enough, but from the position he played, I think that is very, very impressive. So, well, go ahead. That would be our ninth player.
Yep. And we talked about Franco Harris, but he only wore the uniform 1 year. He definitely deserves to be on a list. But the only thing holding him back, not his wonderful career, but his lack of years wearing number 34.
Yeah, I don't, because he wasn't real productive with Seattle. And so I don't know that makes him one of the greatest 34s. You know, that's sort of the spirit of it. But I guess looking at some of the other players, maybe he is the one that's most deserving of that final spot.
There was a little bit of a drop-off between the list we have and some of the others on the list. They're all very reputable pros and all deserving, and admire them because they played, made it to the NFL. But to get to this very prestigious number 34 list, you got to be something special.
Well, I'm wondering, maybe we should think about this with Ironhead Hayward. I mean, 10 seasons with the number 34, didn't have the big numbers like our Hall of Fame running backs did, but he did have some impressive seasons. Well, I guess he only had 1,000 yard season in the NFL. Maybe I'm mistaken there.
He was a feared running back though, and he kind of changed things, but a man that big could have that speed and be able to change games by knocking through the line. So I would not be adverse to adding him to our list.
Okay, I think let's give him the 10th spot. I think we had Joe Zagorski and I, we definitely picked Franco Harris on our 32s, and that's what I think of him as a 32, and Hayward is definitely a 34. So, okay, so that is our list. So we have Craig Hayward, Cookie Gilchrist, Ricky Young, Ray Buchanan, Ricky Williams, Joe Perry, Herschel Walker, Thurman Thomas, Earl Campbell, and Walter Payton. Those are our top number 34s in NFL history that Josie Emba and I, Darren Hayes, have chosen here tonight. So far, 101 years in the NFL. Mm-hmm. Now, Joe, I appreciate you coming in your podcast. You have I've just listened to what you posted this week, and you have a very interesting podcast. I don't know if you want to put it out there a little bit, intrigue the listeners to listen in, but I found it to be very interesting.
Well, what we did this week, Darren, is I tried to find three very unique early Chicago Bears to talk about, and I think we found them. One guy is now, I think, in my opinion, can throw the ball farther than anyone in Bears history, that he was – I guess, documented as throwing the ball 90 yards in practice in the air. I don't know if I can believe it, but there it was. But even more impressive, the same gentleman could throw the ball 60 yards accurately behind his back. So if you can picture you're moving to your he's a left-hander, moving to your left, and all of a sudden they're coming in with their hands up trying to block your pass. You whip it around your back and hit someone streaking downfield 40 yards away. And so that was one of our focuses this week. We also talked about another guy who was successful off the field as a boxer. And then we had an interesting story where we have a third guy who's George Trafton, really the best known of the three. He's in the Hall of Fame, and his short boxing career. And George made the mistake of getting in the ring with an upcoming heavyweight named Primo Carnera, who was soon to be the heavyweight champion. And after knocking out every single guy in bar fights in Chicago, George Trafton lasted less than a minute with Primo. But some of the stuff going into that, we have a little quote from Red Grange recounting how he had an encounter with Machine Gun Jack McGurn, the hitman for Al Capone. So we hope you can listen. And our podcast is called When Football Was Football. It's running now, and take a listen and let us know what you think about those three unique individuals.
Yeah. And definitely something else I wanted to point out. We've been promoting the PFRA's convention that's coming up in the end of June. We've been playing the commercials here quite a bit. Most of our Sports History Network affiliates are playing them also. And Joe, you're going to be speaking at the Pro Football Researchers Association's convention. And, you have any, can you give us a little highlight, a little tease of what you're going to be talking about?
Well, much like during that we talk about in these sessions on uniforms and trying to find some unknown facts about the very early teams from 1920. And so we're going to cover about five or six teams as part of a discussion on the opening night of the conference. So we'll have the Bears, and we'll have the Cardinals, the Chicago Tigers, the Hammond Pros, the Muncie Flyers. And I believe there's one other one that we're going to talk about and give some insight into, maybe dust off those archives and find some interesting facts about those teams. For example, one thing we'll share is that the name of the Cardinals does not come from a bird or from the color of a uniform. So these are kind of fun things that you find in research that we'll be sharing at the PFRA conference coming up in June at Canton, Ohio, at the Pro Football Hall of Fame.
Yeah. Okay. Well, look forward to that. I know we have George Bozica coming on soon to talk about that as well, who's sort of, you know, one of the main organizers of it, the assistant executive director. So we have can look forward to that podcast. He will also be on the Football History Dudes podcast on the 21st of April. So make sure you check out George Bozica there, and Joe Ziemba. You know, you're hearing him quite a bit here on our podcast, but you know that when the football is football, check him out there. Joe's got some great books out there too, and you know, has a lot of great things coming on social media. And I don't know if you want to share your social media with the listeners too, Joe?
Yeah, we do have a site on Facebook just called Chicago Cardinals. If you go to facebook.com/ChicagoCards/, this week we had an interesting photo from the 1935 Chicago Daily News showing the Cardinals surrounding a clock and how they were ready to chew up the clock when the Eagles came to town. So, again, we try and find some interesting things about the Cardinals, and that site's pretty much 100% on the old Chicago Cardinals. And we're on Twitter as well at Cards1925. So please give us a look there as well. And we enjoy chatting about anything old football with anyone.
Well, I appreciate you once again, Joe, for coming on and spending your time with us and sharing your great wealth of knowledge that you have and the great stories and tidbits that you share with us and the trivia. It's just great things in preserving the game of football. And we thank you for helping us get this top 10 number 34s of the NFL, because that was a big task, and appreciate your time, sir.
Thank you very much, Darren. And I think we're going to get a chance to do it again. These are always enjoyable. And thank you for all the work and preparation you put into these. It's not easy finding all these number 34s that have been throughout NFL history. So thank you very much.
Oh, well, thank you. It's our pleasure.
Peeking up at the clock, the time's running down. We're going to go into victory formation, take a knee, and let this baby run out. Thanks for joining us. We'll see you back tomorrow for the next podcast.
We invite you to check out our website, pigskindispatch.com, not only to see the daily football history, but to experience positive football with our many articles on the good people of the game, as well as our own football comic strip, Cleat Marks Comics. Pigskindispatch.com is also on social media outlets, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and don't forget the Pigskin Dispatch YouTube channel to get all of your positive football news and history. Special thanks to the talents of Mike and Gene Monroe, as well as Jason Neff, for letting us use their music during our podcast.
This podcast is part of the Sports History Network, your headquarters for the yesteryear of your favorite sport. You can learn more at sportshistorynetwork.com. Hey there, Sports History fan. This is Arnie Chapman, a.k.a. the Football History Dude, and I wanted to thank you for stopping by to listen to another episode here on the Sports History Network. Our podcasters are passionate about uncovering and sharing sports stories from yesteryear. And if you didn't know it already, we have over 30 shows across the network covering all sorts of sports history topics. In fact, here's a glimpse into one of our awesome podcasts here on the network.
Do you wish you knew more about the 100 seasons of the NFL? You're in luck, because you found the Football History Dude podcast, where each episode is a journey back in time to learn about the rich history of the NFL. From the founding of the league in an auto showroom, all the way to what it is today, America's favorite sport and a behemoth of an industry. My name is Ernie Chapman. Football is my passion, and I want you to come along with me each week to explore the yesteryear of the gridiron. So hop on board my DeLorean, and let's get this baby up to 88 miles per hour.
How about that? I bet you're super hyped to go listen to that new podcast, right? Well, to learn about this show and all the other podcasts on the network, head over to sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Again, that's sportshistorynetwork.com/podcasts. Head over there today to find your next favorite sports history podcast.